Part 1. Nine Dragons. The Forthrast Farm, Northwest Iowa. Thanksgiving. Richard kept his head down. Not all those cow pies were frozen, and the ones that were could turn an ankle. He'd limited his baggage to a carry-on, so the size 11s weaving their way among the green-brown mounds were meshy black cross-trainers that you could practically fold in half and stuff into a pocket. He could have gone to Walmart this morning and bought boots. The reunion, however, would have noticed and made much of such an extravagance. 2 dozen of his relatives were strung out in clumps along the barbed wire fence to his right, shooting into the ravine or reloading. The tradition had started as a way for some of the younger boys to blow off steam during the torturous wait for turkey and pie. In the old days, once they'd gotten back to Grandpa's house from Thanksgiving church service and changed out of their miniature coats and ties, they would burst out the doors and sprint half a mile across the pasture, trailed by a few older men to make sure that matters didn't get out of hand, and shoot 22s and daisies down into the crick. Now grown up with kids of their own, they showed up for the reu with shotguns, hunting rifles, and handguns in the backs of their SUVs. The fence was rusty, but its posts of Osage orange wood were unrotted. Richard and John, his older brother, had put it up 40 years ago to keep livestock from straying down into the crick. The stream was narrow enough that a grown man could cross it with a stride, but cattle were not made for striding or bred for intelligence, and could always contrive some way to get themselves into terrible straits along its steep, crumbling banks. The same feature made it an ideal firing range. Summer had been dry and autumn cold, so the crick was running low under a paper-thin glaze of ice, and the bank above it threw up gouts of loose dirt wherever it stopped a bullet. This made it easy for the shooters to correct their aim. Through his ear protectors, Richard could hear the voices of helpful onlookers. "You're about 3 inches low, 6 inches to the right." The boom of the shotguns, the snap of the 22s, and the pow, pow, pow of the semi-automatic handguns were reduced to a faint patter by the electronics and the hearing protectors, hard-shell earmuffs with volume knobs sticking out of them, which he'd stuffed into his bag yesterday, almost as an afterthought. He kept flinching. The low sun shone in the face of a 200-foot-tall wind turbine in the field across the crick, and its blades cast long, scything shadows over them. He kept sensing the sudden onrush of a bar of darkness that flicked over him without effect, and went on its way to be followed by another and another, the sun above blinking on and off with each cut of a blade. This was all new. In his younger days, it had only been the grain elevators that proved the existence of a world beyond the horizon. But now they had been supplanted and humbled by these pharaonic towers rearing their heads above the prairie, the only thing about this landscape that had ever been capable of inspiring awe. Something about their being in motion, in a place where everything else was almost pathologically still, seized the attention. They always seemed to be jumping out at you from behind corners. Despite the wind, the small muscles of his face and scalp, the parents of headaches, were relaxed for the first time since he had come back to Iowa. When he was in the public spaces of the reu, the lobby of the Ramada, the farmhouse, the football game in the side yard, he always felt that all eyes were on him. It was different here, where one had to attend to one's weapons, to make sure that the barrels were always pointed across the barbed wire. When Richard was seen, it was during terse one-on-one conversations spoken distinctly through ear protection. Younger relations, rookie in-laws, and shirt-tails called him Dick, a name that Richard had never used because of its association in his youth with Nixon. He would answer to Richard or to the nickname Dodge. During the long drive here from their homes in the exurbs of Chicago or Minneapolis or St. Louis, the parents would brief the kids on who was who, some of them even brandishing hard copies of the family tree and dossiers of photos. Richard was pretty sure that when they ventured out onto Richard's branch of the family tree, and a long, stark, forkless branch it was, they got a certain look in their eyes that the kids could read in the rearview mirror, a tone of voice that in this part of the country said more than words were ever allowed to.